Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Welcome, and I am excited to share with you today that we have officially gone international. And my guest today is from the wonderful country of Canada, our friendly friends just north of the border. His name is Pat Crosskerry, and he is located in Nova Scotia. He is a member of the baby boomer generation. He has practiced emergency medicine. He has written a number of books. His accolades, I will put a full list of his accolades in the show notes because they're too numerous to mention right now, but he has been an important figure in Canadian medicine. So let me just say, Pat, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. So tell me a little bit about yourself and your role in healthcare, please.
Thank you. I come from emergency medicine. I've been an emergency physician for the last 35 years or so. And I was a department head for 10 years. So that gives you a particular perspective on what's going on behind the scenes in emergency medicine. My own interest, predominant interest in medicine, aside from emergency, was I was very interested in patient safety since I was a medical student. And in fact, myself and some emergency colleagues set up the Canadian National Symposium on Patient Safety, which ran for about 10 years. We focused on all aspects of patient safety, and it's a complicated business. But I eventually became increasingly interested in the errors which occur from physician thinking. That is to say, clinical decision making, and because these appeared to be the most consequential for patients. And just to complete the story, I had earlier trained as a psychologist, and I was quite comfortable with the language and the concepts of cognitive science, both through, I didn't train specifically as a cognitive psychologist, but throughout my undergrad and graduate training, I spent a lot of time in cognitive psychology, so I got to be familiar with the language and to appreciate the importance of cognitive science is to the decisions that we make in everyday life, not just in medicine, but in everything we do.
Okay, talk to me a little bit about patient safety and what you were working on there. I'm assuming it's more than just putting a wristband on someone that says that they are a fall risk. What were you looking at with patient safety in particular?
Well, to begin with, I mean, we looked across the spectrum because patient safety was a fairly new concept at the turn of the century. It really didn't sort of kick off until the Institute of Medicine report appeared. To where is human. So at that time, we were interested in all aspects of it, in the way the system works, in the way that the individual works. And eventually, we came to focus on medical error and the adverse events that come from that. And your listeners may be aware that medical error is ranked about third or so behind heart disease and cancer as a leading cause of death, which is absolutely astounding. So as I say, all aspects of patient safety, how a system fails, how from the local department or clinic that you're working in, all the way through to how it fails on a national level. And our findings particularly started to focus in on how doctors think. And around about 2006, we were helped considerably by Jerry Groopman's book, How Doctors Think. People's focus tended to be, if your doctor failed you or the healthcare system failed you, people often said that the doctor didn't know enough or that they don't know what they're doing. And that to us, when we looked into that a little more, bit more deeply, we realized that medical knowledge is really not a major contributor to medical error. It mostly comes about through how doctors think, and that's really where most of our emphasis lay. We were interested in how doctors and caregivers thought their way through the problems that they were presented with. So I think that was the main issue around quality care, and all the other sort of parameters of care, quality and safety, they seem to flow from how people make decisions.
And so what were you finding were the influencers that were making, that were detrimental to decision making? Was it external circumstances? Was it internal? What were the factors that were contributing to poor decision making?
Yeah, well, I, a number of studies have been done on this, and it sort of breaks down into contributions from the environment in which you work, our actual workplace. And that we referred to as the system. And the other contributor is the individual and how the individual thinks. So some of the classic earlier studies had looked at the origin of medical errors and found that they overlap to a significant extent. But in general, you could say that the system that the patient is in fails about a quarter of the time, and the individual caregiver, the physician, the nurse practitioner, the physician's assistant, whoever's the final conduit for the diagnosis, they fail about 75% of the time in terms of the contribution to patient safety and error. I'm not saying that physicians fail 75% of the time. They don't. They succeed about 85% of the time. So the thing that we were interested in particular in how diagnoses get made, it became apparent that physicians were failing there about 10 to 15% of the time.
Got it. What does quality healthcare mean to you?
Well, if you want to talk about quality in general, there are about half a dozen parameters that the patient safety movement has focused on. It should be healthcare that is safe, that you avoid harm to patients. It should be effective, that you're doing the right thing at the right time. It should be centered on the patient. It should be timely. You get to problems earlier rather than later. It should be efficient, and it should be equitable, which means that it shouldn't involve personal characteristics such as gender, ethnicity, geographic location, socioeconomic status, things like that. So that's the overall picture of quality. But, you know, at the danger of repeating myself, but I'm happy to repeat myself on this one, we found that if we focused on quality of decision making, and this isn't just a sort of mission statement, this really is saying decision making is very important. If we have good decision making, then those other parameters of quality will tend to follow. I think it's important that we recognize that this is a special skill. It isn't just a sort of general notion of what people should be doing. We think, I mean, I think now that we have to start at an early age in teaching people how to make decisions. It is a science, and it can be taught. And if you look at what the psychologists have discovered, children around the age of 7 or 8 or 9, fairly early on, can begin to understand concepts of critical thinking. And so we think it has to start way back there, but then eventually we hope it would mature into university courses and degrees, and eventually sort of graduate work in decision making. So that's the direction we'd like to see it go. And there are some encouraging signs that is beginning to happen now. But of course, in healthcare, we haven't yet fully acknowledged that how people make decisions is one of the most important, if not the most important, characteristic of their clinical behavior.
Got it. Can you give me an example of quality healthcare?
I think it's essentially getting the right diagnosis to the right person at the right time. I think diagnosis is probably the most critical thing that we do. So if you've got the diagnosis right, a lot of other things will follow. I would put an emphasis on an essential feature of healthcare quality is correct diagnosis at the right time.
Got it. What do you wish people understood about your role in healthcare?
Well, I think that physicians have played different roles in healthcare over the years. At different times, we've been seen as authoritarian figures. We've been seen as, for some people, a high-priced help. What I'd like to see evolve is a notion of physicians and healthcare providers as facilitators of good decision-making by the patient, so that the patient can make decisions and choices that are rational and will lead to healthier lives. I see the physician in that sort of role rather than I'm going to go to a doctor to get fixed, or I'm going to go to a clinic to get fixed. So we'd like to see our role, I'd like to see our role as more teachers and coaches in how people navigate their choices in life. And if we do that, then we might be able to stop a lot of disease from developing in the first place instead of fixing it once it's happened. So I just like to emphasize to patients, we're not authority figures. We're not, there's nothing special about us other than we are well trained to help people in making good decisions about how they should live and how they can internalize good decision-making.
Yeah, in some ways, this is way oversimplification in an analogy, but people sometimes view the doctor as the fairy godmother whose magic wand is the prescription pad, where you go to the doctor and they write the prescription for the thing that's just going to magically fix you. And what you're talking about is changing that paradigm to it becoming a not even just a mutual process of decision making, but empowering the patient to make better decisions. Is that a proper understanding of what you said?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think you said it a bit clearer than I did.
No problem. What excites you about the future of healthcare?
Well, I actually got excited yesterday by seeing a paper in the literature on medical decision making. And it's one of the few things that does excite me about medicine is this. When I first started on this journey about 20 years ago, there was virtually no awareness or insight in medicine into these issues. If you go back historically and look at the medical literature, you can see references to clinical decision making and so on now and again. But nobody kind of took it explicitly or seriously. This general assumption seems to have been made through medical training that if you put medical students through these curricula that we devise through a process of osmosis or something else, they will acquire some sort of diagnostic acumen and some sort of skills in clinical decision making. But we don't teach people explicitly how to do this. And there is a whole curriculum that you can use to actually help students in training in understanding what goes on when they're actually making a decision. This is a hard science. This is a very well-defined science now. And I'm excited because from there being very little about 20 years ago, there are a number of papers emerging now which talk about I did a review of medicine, the medical literature about 5 years ago, and virtually every discipline from pediatrics to surgery to psychiatry, dermatology, all of them, they've all begun to publish their own papers in the impact of cognitive biases on medical decision making and started to open up their own literatures about this. So I think this is an exciting development, and I think it's going to shape the way that medical practice is going to be done down the road.
I understand. Thank you. What is one thing medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
Well, I do think that the majority of physicians out there, and probably the majority listening to this podcast, will not have had explicit training in decision making. And I would say if I was embarking on a medical career, if I was at the beginning of it or whatever field I was in, I would start trying to get familiar with these concepts of how psychologists describe what we do when we're thinking. And I've seen myself really as a sort of translator, as somebody who translates the psychological literature into the medical literature so that we can use the work that they've done. I think our capacity for becoming rational decision makers, a rational decision maker, is probably the most important goal that we should have. And I don't think all of us understand that. But there are now some very well-written papers out there that are worth reading, as well as several books. And if most importantly, if you're in medical education, I think you have to make sure that this approach is covered in your curriculum. There is actually an ethical obligation to do this. And a number of schools have started going in that direction in the UK, in the States, and in Canada. And just a few weeks ago, I was invited to do a talk in Brazil, a virtual talk in Brazil. And the name of the conference was the first Brazilian conference on clinical decision making. And I was very gratified to see that. And they were very much influenced by the work that had been done in North America. But the field really is opening up. We all have an obligation to be familiar with the concepts that people are beginning to talk about.
Yeah, and I will, if anyone who's interested in learning more about this, I will put a link to your latest book in the show notes so that they can check that out. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining me. Pat Cross-Carey, I appreciate your perspective on healthcare.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.